to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hello, Where Brains Meet Beauty listeners / industry insiders. And hello to Eleni, our Base Beauty VP Client Success.
Hi, Jodi. Hi, listeners. Happy to be here.
Before we jump into this amazing pod episode, we have some very interesting client work to chat about.
Yes. Today, we want to talk about something that we're really proud of as an agency. Our client, Plus One, transformed what started as a misogynist, demeaning, disrespectful stunt into an empowering message with staying power. Let's get into it.
Yeah. So let's go back to the end of the summer at WNBA games. They were being interrupted by flying mystery objects, or I'll just call them what they are, which are dildos. When we saw the news, my first move was to text the brand CEO, Maria Warrington. She's a client and she's been a guest on our show here. And I just had this really strong feeling that she would want Plus One to be the brand that changed the narrative on this gross stunt.
Yeah, absolutely. The second that we saw that headline, it was very clear this needed to be a Plus One moment for their brand.
Exactly. Like, Plus One is all about being purpose-driven. They're a women's pleasure brand. What's so amazing about them is they're so accessible. Accessible price points, easy to find on shelf. And they are the brand that was not going to let this narrative stand. And I'm so proud of all the amazing, impactful ways our team brought this newsjacking moment to life.
Mm-hmm. We really, with Plus One, flipped the story. We've reminded everyone that Plus One is the original buzzer beater in holistic digital activations. We did influencer partnerships, seeding programs, media relations, and organic content.
So let's dig into the meat of this. This is really fun. We worked really hard and fast because this is like a big sprint, right? That timing is everything with newsjacking. So we worked really hard to find the right WNBA personality to be the face of the storytelling. And it was really important for our team and the Plus One team that it's not a brand voice coming through. It's the team, the sport, the athlete's voice. And we partnered with Seattle Storm host and former college basketball player, Casey Kirihara. So she is this incredible media-centric in arena host. She's basically the ultimate hype woman for the Seattle Storm team. And totally coincidentally, she has neon green hair. And if you saw what was going on with the stunt by the crypto company, this bright green color was a really key element and a great way for us to reclaim this narrative. So Casey, she created this incredibly funny, entertaining, uplifting, and empowering video in partnership with Plus One. It made such an impact on TikTok and Instagram, and it delivered the most perfect, clever response.
Yeah, Casey was amazing. The internet loved her content. Engagement spiked instantly, and another piece of the program with Casey was collaboration with seeding. So she sent packages, Plus One packages, to her network of female athletes. This was a bit of her call to action. And the media picked it up. It was featured in Complex, The Drum, Yahoo, and syndicated sites shared the news as well.
Right. So this is a really good example of how you turn a cultural flashpoint into a lasting moment of empowerment.
Yeah, cultural speed, brand purpose, making sure it ties back to Plus One, and fearless creativity from our team. That's what made it work.
So we'll put that case study up on LinkedIn really soon. It's such a great example of newsjacking. This is hard work. It has to move so fast to be relevant. And we had a client partner who understood that too, right? We were in daily, minute-by-minute text collaboration with the head of marketing and Maria, and they're incredible partners to get this going live.
Yeah, it was a really fun project. So Jodi, tell us about who we have on today's episode of Where Brains Meet Beauty.
Oh, this is such a nice episode. Joining us are two incredible thought partners who are shaping the industry in a very different yet connected ways. So it's Annie Robertson-Hockey. She's the president and head of consulting at SkyTail Group. And Lauren DeMore. She's the vice president of Prelude Growth Partners.
Amazing. And on this episode, we're going to explore their unique career paths. They started with early dreams of ballet and medicine to now where they are leading in investment and med spa innovation.
I feel like we should go back in time and count how many of our guests had dreams of being a ballerina.
Yes.
Many. Doctors, too.
Uh-huh.
A lot of dancers in our industry.
Yeah, it's been interesting to hear that a few times.
So, gosh, we talked about so many amazing things. Okay, the first I want to talk about is the insights on what it takes to scale, right? Scaling a business, this is what everybody needs, right? You start with an idea. That's still just an idea. You still need a business. You need revenue. You need growth. So we talked about scaling sustainably. We spoke a lot about retaining patients and providers in that medical space. This is, you know, getting butts in seats, as they say, is very challenging. And the most challenging of all is building real customer and patient loyalty. Oof, that's tough.
Absolutely. And then this episode takes a really fun turn. We wrap things up with a little book club showdown. Annie and Lauren reveal titles that interest them.
Okay. These were amazing conversations. This is the end of our Q3 Career Capital theme. It was Voices in Beauty, Finance, and Investing. It was an amazing, amazing day at our listening party recording all these 6 episodes. And our Q4 theme, which we actually just recorded last week, is Artists and Influencer Insights, Wisdom Behind the Craft. So that's the theme you'll hear next on the show.
Let's get to it. Here's episode 294 with Annie Robertson-Hockey and Lauren DeMore.
Hey, beauty founders, brand builders, and industry insiders. Are you ready to level up?
Our friends at Kosako are back for the 9th annual edition of Beauty Connect. It is happening November 3rd through the 5th at the gorgeous Fairmont Century Plaza in Los Angeles.
Beauty Connect is the industry's go-to problem-solving platform. Our COO, Sarah Lavallee, will be joining this year for Base Beauty.
You'll also be surrounded by some of your favorite brands, Supergoop, House Labs, L'Occitane, Nordstrom, Bloomingdale's, and Beekman 1802.
We're talking curated one-on-one meetings, a luxe gift bag, intimate closed-door dinners with retailers, investors, and your sharpest peers.
Head to beautyconnectla.com and use our code WBMB for 10% off your ticket.
Let us know if you'll be attending. Your next big break could be in that room. Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. I have 2 amazing thought partners in the beauty industry sitting with me today, Annie Robertson-Hockey, President and Head of Consulting at SkyTail Group, and Lauren DeMore, Vice President, Prelude Growth Partners. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
So I want to just talk for a moment about the fact that this is our 6th recording in one day, last recording of the day of our Career Capital, Voices in Finance and Investing theme. And I know that you guys are going to give us a party, right?
Always.
Okay. Yeah. So this is going to be, we're going to get hooting and hollering from the audience because they're going to be so moved by all the insights you share. So thank you for being here with us. It's been a really fun day. I personally learned a lot about your careers and your side of the industry, and I know our listeners will too. So as you know, it's a career journey show, and we love to investigate and dig into how we all end up doing what we're doing. And the first question I ask everybody today is about your career dreams when you were a child. So Lauren, we'll start with you. You're 10 years old. What do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah. So I come from a family of doctors. My parents are doctors. My older sister's a doctor. I thought I'd be a doctor. And there's actually this really great photo that we were just looking at that should have told me otherwise, but essentially my twin sister and I are around 10, and she had sliced her knee open, and my surgeon mom is stitching her up on our kitchen table, essentially, and you have my older sister, who's now a surgeon, holding her leg, like just holding it, looking at the wound, and then me and my twin kind of up top by her face, just covering our eyes, completely looking away, so the medical path was not for me, I think better for everyone. And yeah, we found finance.
And Annie?
You know, mine's a little bit of a cliche, but I wanted to be, well, to be fair, I was deciding between being a pet store owner and being a ballerina.
Okay, I want to just give a hoot for the ballerina because this is actually one of our top mentions career paths, and we've done almost 300 episodes. So, yeah. But you're the first ballerina of the day. We've heard doctor before, but first ballerina of the day.
And I will say, in my defense, I actually almost was one. So that was my first career, and then I let that go to college. But, you know, I stuck to my word.
Okay, so we're going to examine how our paths sort of show up in weird and strange ways. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you knew that looking at open wounds is not going to be for you, but is there part of that world that still, you know, kind of comes to life today in your work?
Yeah, a bit. So how Annie and I actually met is we invested in a medical aesthetic practice where they're injecting patients, and it's all about the patient journey and really taking care of the patient first and foremost. So I like to think I understand that a little bit more. And then I also find myself reading clinicals as we look into supplements quite a bit, where usually I'm outsourcing and frankly sending something to a parent and saying, hey, is this legit or not? But there's a bit of it in those ways, I would say.
Yeah, the curiosity is the same, mm-hmm. right? So Annie, you mentioned that you were almost a professional dancer. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I started ballet much to my parents' chagrin because it meant a lot of driving when I was about 7 and just sort of fell in love with it. And, you know, suddenly you're going 1 day a week, 2 days a week, 3 days a week. And the latter course, I think middle school on, I left school every day early. I would take a taxi and, you know, make my way downtown and would just train and spend all of my summers training. So ended up getting, you know, having some injuries, so decided maybe my body was saying no, but very much it was what I spent most of my growing up doing.
What city were you living in?
Seattle.
And that must have created a lot of independence in you.
That did create a lot of independence. Yes, but I thought that was normal until recently I was thinking about it. I was like, my mom let me sit in a taxi by myself and probably change in the back. Like, let's be honest. And, like, I thought it was pretty darn normal.
Was this, I don't know how old you are, is this before cell phones or you had a cell phone?
Yeah, this is prior.
Prior to cell phones. Okay, so you were just out in the world and no one could track your green dot. Like, I track my kid's dot, you know, on my phone, right?
Yeah. No, I was.
Okay, so let's talk about the careers that you have now. You're on a little bit of the different sides of the same business. And if just to give the lay of the land to our listeners, Lauren, just tell us about like what the world is that you're doing right now at Prelude.
Yes. So I'm a consumer growth equity investor. So we partner with earlier stage high growth consumer brands, many of which are in the beauty and personal care space. So we've partnered with beauty brands like Sol de Janeiro, Summer Fridays, Westman Atelier, and then also in the medical aesthetic space, as I mentioned, with brands like Skin Farm.
So Prelude has a track record of partnering with like the next big thing.
We try, yes.
Are there things that we haven't heard about that don't become the next big thing where it's like, that wasn't a good idea or that didn't work out the way we want?
I'd say our fund is still relatively new. So we're trying to make all of them the next big thing. But I'm sure with time, it'll tell if they become that or not.
Okay, we're going to come back to this about like the secret sauce of becoming the next big thing. Okay, yeah. And Annie, tell us about what your side of the business is.
Yeah, and I will say I have like a crush on your portfolio. Every time we talk, you have like fun products in the back. And I'm like, oh, her job is so exciting and jazzy. So I work at Skytail Group, and we're a boutique consumer and healthcare focused investment banking and consulting firm. So I sort of wear two hats at the firm. I'm president of the firm, so I oversee really all of the back office functions across banking and consulting. That is anything from, you know, FP&A to HR, accounting, et cetera, marketing. But then my sort of day-to-day mandate is growing and scaling our consulting team. And to her point, we have just really found a niche in medical aesthetics, both on the banking and consulting practice. I think half of my clients are either independent med spas or private equity-backed med spas or financial sponsors that maybe want to buy a med spa and are hoping to learn more about that or sort of diligence a particular asset. But it's very fun. I'm pretty lucky.
So we connected because of Derm Beauty Connect, mm-hmm. which was an event mm-hmm. in, was it March?
Yeah.
And what's so amazing about the worlds that we're in is how exciting aesthetics and the whole med spa world has become. Yeah. And at Base Beauty, we've been working with professionally dispensed skincare brands for like really a long time, like, I don't know, 15 years or something like this. It was not hot. It was not sexy. It was not like perceived as like an interesting facet of the business back then. Mm-hmm. People weren't loud and proud about working for a physician dispensed brand. And now it's like the place to be. So let's talk a little bit about the excitement of this category. We'll start with you, Annie. There's basically a med spa in every corner now. There's a bank and a med spa. Mm-hmm. So what is really happening in this category? And is it sustainable?
Oh, it's a great question. I mean, in terms of sustainability, last year the market did grow overall. That said, the number of med spas opening did outpace that. So on average, same store sales were kind of roughly flat. That said, I mean, the TAM, the total market, is expanding every day. Men, I think the number of men who are using these services doubled over the last year and a half. Younger and younger folks are getting treatments. It's also become sort of more mass market. There's a lot more accessible price points. So I think yes, many med spas are opening, but also so many more people are getting treatments that we're still really bullish on the space. But I would say, you know, there's always a new hot trend. Mm-hmm. The real sexy word right now is exosomes, mm-hmm. And growth factor. But I would say the kind of market trend overall is the tying together of inner and outer health and wellness. And so if I'm I'm younger, I want to feel that way, or vice versa, more commonly, like if I feel really good, I kind of want my exterior to reflect that. And so it's been a really interesting exercise of adding on longevity, functional wellness, all of those things into many of our med spa practices in a safe way.
Very interesting topic. I want to come back to that one. Let's go back, Lauren, to the secret sauce at Prelude. Like, these aren't just like, oh, that's a nice brand that you work with. Like, these are like the mega brands that you were early stage investors in, right? Mm-hmm. So what do you think is happening in your picker and in the advising that you offer these brands to make them the next big thing?
Yeah. And I can use the med spa as an example. Essentially, what we're trying to do is dig in and find some proof point in the data that the consumer love and loyalty is there. So with the med spa, we were really digging into how much was that patient coming back to her provider, how loyal was not only the patients, but were the providers. And that was something that was incredible, where essentially every provider that had joined this business, the culture was so strong that they had not left. And you just see the growth just further supported by the providers who are kind of the heart and soul of the business. So I think whether it's a beauty brand or a beauty service or whatever you have in the consumer space, it's trying to find those data and proof points that point to an incredibly loyal consumer, and then making sure there's a really strong founder, like in the case of Megan Griffin at Skin Farm, who we're willing and wanting to back, and we think has the vision to make the next big brand.
Okay, so let's talk about how loyalty is built here.
Yeah.
Because there's, okay, med spa on every corner. You mentioned price points have changed, they've come down. So now, like, everybody's playing the, like, I'm going to do it lower, I'm going to do it lower price, right? It's just become, like, just so promotional. Or what does it take for a med spa chain to create that type of loyalty, the numbers that you're seeing in the case that you just spoke about, where it's like obvious that like this patient is not going anywhere else? Because like that's how I feel about my dermatologist, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. the dermatologist is not a promotional experience, right? And it's not a street level storefront experience. So when med spas come to us to talk about marketing, their biggest challenge is like butts in seats, and they seem really more obsessed with just getting that appointment than actually building a loyal customer.
Yeah. I'd love to hear your point of view too, but the thing that we loved about Skin Farm was their number one thing they were focused on was the experience, and the provider drives the experience. So it was creating this culture where providers wanted to work there. They have an incredible experience themselves. They don't leave. And we see the patients loyal to the provider. So if you keep the provider, you typically keep the patient. And if the experience is strong enough, we're not trying to play the price game. So we just try not to even delve into that world of the Groupon consumer. We instead say, okay, that's 20-25% of the market. We don't want that portion. We'll just take this more attractive consumer who's willing to pay what the service deserves.
Annie, what are you seeing?
Well, I could talk about this for like maybe the entire day.
Okay. So buckle up. I'll cut you off when we get to the game.
Oh, God. I really agree with your point. Folks will ask me like, what metrics should you track? And I tend to say, if you have high patient retention and high provider retention, it probably everything else is actually working. It's such a great symbol. And I do think there's an overemphasis on getting new patients, but like you have this whole group of, your existing patient, that's really where so much energy should be spent. We've done a lot of survey work, and in terms of like why people select med spas, and interestingly, price point tends to be like third, where, you know, number one or two interchangeably are experience overall. Is it a beautiful facility? Is it welcoming? Did they give me like a soda water when I walked in? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I think just quality of treatments. I think for our patients, though, one of the things that we try to emphasize is how do we build patient loyalty to, or for our clients, how do we build patient loyalty to the brand, not the person?
Right.
Because what I don't want is exactly that, right? Where someone leaves and they take their book of business with you. So it's like, how do you create that amazing experience? And this is where med spa, though it's healthcare, is really consumer and creating that loyalty with a brand that's so compelling.
Right. So this is new territory because my derm, she's not going anywhere. This is a practice she's built for the past 25 years, you know, in New York City. So she never had to think about, or the business never had to think about, if one of the derms of the practice left, like, we just lost our business. Yeah. So this is kind of a brand new problem. And maybe that's why it's such like a race to whatever people are racing to, because like there aren't really strong examples of how success is created. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to Lauren, where you have this business where the providers love being there and the patients love the experience. How do you make that connection between patient and brand without diluting the importance of the provider, right? Because they're sticking needles in my face. I need to trust them.
Right. No, I think that was a really good point. And we've been investing a lot into training and education so that the experience is just the same across, regardless of who you see. You can be in a different city with a different provider, and really leaning into kind of the bar staying the same with regardless of who you go see, to try to mitigate a bit of that.
Mm-hmm. And how hard is that to do?
I think we're in the scaling stage. I think as you continue to grow, it becomes more of a process and procedure element. So we're starting to hit a bit of that inflection point, but we've been able to lean on so far these providers who have been with the business since it was founded, which has been really incredible to kind of impart that culture that the founder is a nurse practitioner herself, that she herself kind of set up and built for this experience.
How many doors are you at?
We're at 12.
Okay. So let's shift gears a little bit. Because we could talk about this all day, and we will. We'll go have lunch and we'll keep talking. But I want to learn more about, like, what is success? How is it defined for you in your careers, right? So you're in the same world on different sides of the business, both been doing this a long time. Annie, we'll start with you. In the beginning of your career, when you first walked into this finance world, what did you think success looked like? What did it mean to you?
I mean, good reviews, right? Like it's when you're sort of.
You mean
of
when your boss says you're doing a great job?
Yeah. And, you know, I started my career in startups where kind of there was like no success criteria. And actually, like, I made my own goals because I was like, how do I know if I'm getting a gold star? Maybe I'll just have, like, I need to create some way of knowing if I'm doing well.
Okay, that's because you had dance teachers always telling you you're doing it wrong, or you're right? So you needed 100%, that.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Pay attention to me. But I think, when you're in consulting or finance, it's a pretty clear, like, fortunately or unfortunately, it's very clear if you're doing really well. Now, when you get later on in your career, that becomes much more ambiguous, and you sort of have to reassess, like, how do I show up and why am I showing up? But earlier on in those environments, it's pretty programmatic, I would say.
Okay, so now fast forward, you are the boss and that review is totally different, right? Based on different metrics. So what does success look like for you today?
Success for me is success of my people and success of my clients. And also trust. Last week I had a few of our CEOs who, I'm usually not super day-to-day involved in cases. And I had two of our CEOs reach out and sort of say, hey, do you have 5 minutes to talk? And I realized I was just like that call, where like something broke, they were having a really hard day. Always it's a combination of business things and personal things. And like that trust is pretty special.
Mm-hmm. Right. That they knew that they could talk to you and even if they just needed to vent, that you could help.
Yeah. I was the person they picked up the phone to call.
That is a sweet moment.
Yeah.
Lauren, what about you? What did success look like early in your career?
Yeah, I was thinking something very similar along the lines of, it was much more about just getting through what was on your plate, getting that deal done, getting through the to-do list, versus now so much more of it has to be about, okay, how am I spending my time? And it's on me to make sure I'm learning and kind of getting what I need to get out of it from the experience.
Before Prelude, were you in roles where the subject matter was less like exciting and sexy?
I've been in consumer since the start. I started in investment banking and then moved to a middle market private equity fund. I love the early stage growth brands. I think it's hard to get more exciting than that in the consumer space. But so much more of my mind share, frankly, at that stage was around less of the brands itself and more just like figuring out how to do the job.
Mm-hmm. When you have people on the team who are younger, earlier in their careers, yeah. How do you lead them? How do you help them understand, you know, yes, the basics of the job, but also what they have ahead of them?
A lot of it has been just forcing the time in the day to really step back and say, okay, we've just done this work for this portfolio company, or we're about to dig into this new deal. Here's why we're excited about the opportunity or what we're focused on. And I've also seen just asking their opinion on the deal, their opinion on what should be done, forces that thought process really nicely, because otherwise it, like I mentioned, it can be so easy to just get in the gear of churning through the work and getting the work done.
Okay, so can we just stay here a minute and then we'll, I'll take the same question to Annie. You mentioned like forcing time in the day to make this happen.
Yeah.
When I started my career, so it's a long time ago, I'm almost 50, the job of my boss was to teach me about the work. And there's time in the day, right? Like she'd take me to meetings and she'd say, you're not talking, but you're just here listening, right? And then after the meeting, she'd explain to me why she said this, why she didn't say this, why she showed this, why, right? So that was just normal. It was like a normal part of the job is to teach the next person how to do the job, but you have to force time now, right? Because things move so fast. So I think this is one of the challenges of our ecosystem of, you know, potential new hires is some people just aren't trained.
Yeah.
Right. So, can you just dig in a little bit more for our listeners? Like, how do you force the time? How do you make sure this is on the list? Because it's really easy to just move on to the next thing and not do this coaching.
Yeah. I think it's also a bit of a two-way street where I love when they come with questions and, or we're going through something and they're probing on, okay, you're asking me to do this, but why? Like taking the time to follow up in that way. And then it's hard because to your point, everyone's so busy, but just forcing the sit down regroups after big projects or big meetings, I think is the only way to really make that learning happen is real time.
So Annie, you have, you know, you're responsible for the people in your organization. So how does this show up for you, the learning and the leadership?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you had a wonderful boss, it sounds like, that they were, that he or she
was doing that. Yes, I did. The boss's boss I still keep in touch with.
That's amazing.
Who was like the most amazing boss I ever had. Yeah.
Well, that's an example of success.
Yeah.
You know, I think there are, I think in systems. It's like, okay, if how do we create a system that works today but would also work if we're 50 people, for 100 people, for 200 people? And I think in advising, there is direct learning and then there is a sort of shadowing apprentice model learning, which is just watching, to your point, and seeing how people handle different situations. For overt learning, we're small, so we don't have the infrastructure of, say, an investment bank or a consulting firm that, like, you know, they spend the first year really just training these kids with a skill set. I have, like, folks are slightly farther along in their careers, but I wanted to make it fun, and there were some things I wanted to make sure that everyone knew, so we did start SkyTail University, which is very fun, and we have matching sweatshirts, and then we always get drinks after, because I want to associate learning with fun, you know, it's my psych major, so that's, you know, overt learning, where we lecture, and we pick topics, and then I try to really make sure, you know, that whatever level someone is, they have enough shadowing opportunities with that next rung. So there's a certain point where I will start to bring someone to a conference with me and bring them to the meeting so they can watch. And then maybe they can have a meeting with someone more junior and sort of learn by doing in a low risk way.
My fantasy at Beast Beauty is that we have so many people and so much time that we can do the shadowing. And I feel like as an executive leadership team, we would really love to onboard people in a way that's like, let's take your time. And it has never worked out. Even like when you line up all the things to make it happen, just work moves so fast and people just get thrown into learning.
Yeah.
But there really is something so valuable about the taking a pause. Why are we doing this? Why did we do this? Why did it work this way? Why did it not work this way?
And also sometimes you actually don't do an amazing job. And so I'll often, you know, even if we have a tricky client meeting, you know, with my team, how could we have handled this situation mm-hmm. better? What could I have said? You know, we'll workshop some of those things too, because it's not like, you know, I'm always 100% too.
So let's stay on this theme, but applying it to you and your points of your career. Like, Lauren, what do you want to learn next? Like, what is kind of on your wish list for advancing pleasure in the industry and also your own career?
Yeah. I think a lot of it at this point is trying to amass the whole array of different experiences. Like, I've seen a few situations play out with portfolio companies. It's even better when I'm now hitting the stage of my career where I will have seen things start to finish. Mm-hmm. I think that's where you really get the fulsome learning, and it's more reps, different types of deals, different types of companies, and frankly, different things going wrong mm-hmm. because that unfortunately has been the best learning, mm-hmm. but just getting more of those reps in, I think.
So more reps, going back to ballet school, right? The more you do it, the more you learn, right? So what would you like to do, like, to advance your career? What do you want to learn?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And, you know, I try to be a sort of a generally lifelong learner. I think my opportunity now for learning is, how do I coach folks who are further along in their career? Mm-hmm. Like, how do I make folks who are, you know, producers more senior and frankly not need me? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, how do I make my team not need me is actually probably like my North Star for mm-hmm. this coming year. So then, you know, they are empowered with this new skill set, and then I can sort of spend my time and shift to another way. But those are like the soft skills that at a startup, it's kind of hard because I actually don't have anyone to shadow.
Right.
And so it's on me to either find a coach or put myself in opportunities where I can find a mentor to do that for me.
Okay. So this is actually a really interesting thought. How do you go about the process to make your direct reports not need you?
I do so much of what you said where, you know, I think folks, when something happens, they want to talk and they pick up the phone and they'll ask me questions. And I often say, you know, you have a lot more information about this than me. What do you think? Like mm-hmm. the number of times I say, what would you do? Mm-hmm. What would you think? And just pushing the decision back to them. And then, you know, they feel safe because I can validate that. But mm-hmm. it takes so much discipline when you're moving fast and not just say like, do this, 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 right? Yeah. What would you do? It's kind of my mantra.
I love that. And I think it's probably interesting. It would be interesting to know how many times a day do you actually say that?
Like, oh my gosh, right?
Right. And then yeah, as the KPI that you're looking for success, like if you had to say it 100 times 1 week and then it's 75 and then it's 50, you know it's working.
Yeah. Right. I think about that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Track it among all the other KPIs you're tracking.
Yeah.
Okay. So the last a topic I want to cover off on before we move to the game is around like life outside of work. How are you spending your time, and when do you need those extra things to be like de-stressing tactics, right? Like what are you doing to sort of unwind yourself? Because, you know, we're in beauty and a lot of people go to beauty when they want to unwind from their life as like, I don't know, a lawyer or something, but that's work, right? Okay. So tell me, Lauren, like what do you tend to navigate towards?
Yeah. My morning workout time is really kind of sanity keeping for me. It's typically with friends, or Tim is here, just time to kind of for myself before the day starts. I also love to read, but stuff gets busy and that falls to the wayside. But working out is really that one consistent thing for me.
So you make friend dates for workouts?
Yeah. I have a couple of close friends who either live in my building mm-hmm. or a couple blocks away, and they'll join me on runs.
Oh, I love that.
It's really fun.
And Annie?
I love that. When you're busy also combining things.
Yeah, friend time.
It's an efficient approach.
And if you're very strong cardiovascularly, you can maintain a conversation even during the length of the run.
Let's just say I would say no.
Yeah, I would be like, I'll listen to you, but I probably won't be able to eke out any words.
It's productive.
It's a good question. I mean, there's so the time outside of our jobs is so finite that I'm really protective of that time. And I think there's, you know, getting back to baseline and whole. And for me, you know, Pilates is oxygen. That's not a negotiable. Again, just mental health. There's a certain amount of time with my people that also is sort of like an oxygen and non-negotiable. Fortunately, I still love beauty. So like, you know, even on my free time, one of my close friends is now my injector, and he and I will go get dinner and I'll interrogate him, and then I'll give him some advice. He'll give me some free products, you know, like it actually is really fun to work in a space that I genuinely do want to learn more about. It makes my life immensely easier.
It's amazing when you meet people who are not in the category or even close to it, like how fascinated they are by working in the beauty and wellness space. It's like really like, it's like being a pop star, you know, it's like, oh my God, how do you do that? What is that like? Right. It's so abstract and so foreign. Like, I don't think people even think to do their jobs here, right? Even though they're buying products, they don't think about it. Okay. So let's move on to our game. We have a book club showdown, right? Oh, goodness. So you're going to make more time for reading after having this conversation. So it's what Brains Meets Beauty book club. We're going to mention some new releases, and you'll tell us which one you'd pick for your reading group, okay? I do love to read. I fall in and out of it. But when I'm in it, I'm like, this is great. I'm so proud of myself. Yeah. So hopefully this will inspire some of our listeners. Okay, so the topic number one is career journey. One book is called Source Code, My Beginnings by Bill Gates. And this is a tech founder origin story with humility, ambition, and self-reflection. Mm-hmm. Or A Different Kind of Power by Jacinda Ardern. This is a former New Zealand prime minister exploring her career decisions, sudden crises, and the power of compassion in politics. Okay, so let's start. Lauren, which book are you choosing? Source Code or A Different Kind of Power?
The latter. I remember, wasn't she the one who was very prominent in COVID? I think she was doing very good things.
Natasha makes his games, and she does a really good job.
I think that's all I've got there. But the latter.
Annie?
Given my favorite business book is actually called Power, I think the latter as well.
Okay. Okay, nonfiction. Everything is Tuberculosis by John Green, which is a deeply human look at the past and present of TB, blending personal stories and social history. Or On Brand by Eliza Licht, who was the DKNY PR girl. I don't know if you remember that from a long time ago. It's a memoir / career guidance book.
Lauren. I'm intrigued by the latter again.
On Brands. Yeah. I have it. It's good. It's worth reading. Yeah.
I haven't heard of that one.
I think Tuberculosis, in part because I love Moulin Rouge. And if you there's a connection there. But I just love historical fiction and history. And I think it's a really, you know, it's society overcoming something that's hard and that happens in any given generation. I think it'd be right now an interesting moment too.
I mean, this title, the title of the book is Everything is Tuberculosis. Like, this is an amazing title. How can you look away from that? Okay, next one is biography versus memoir. Agatha Christie, An Elusive Woman by Lucy Worsley. This is a critically acclaimed UK bestseller finally hitting US shelves. Oh, that's deeply researched biography and unpacking the life and mystery of the Queen of Crime. Or Book of Lives, a memoir of sorts by Margaret Atwood, a literary reflection on life, creativity, and the intersections between art and biography. Lauren, is it Agatha Christie or Margaret Atwood?
I think the Agatha Christie, we've been very into Mobland lately, and the crime scene is captivating.
Annie?
I've been told I should watch that, but I'm actually good. Too scared.
It's not bad.
Okay. I think the latter was, what was the title?
Book of Lives, a memoir of sorts by Margaret Atwood, a literary reflection on life, creativity, and intersections between art and biography.
Gosh, I love Margaret Atwood, so I'd actually be really intrigued to understand kind of how dystopian novels are like one of my favorite type of fiction. And I'd be curious to hear sort of how she conceptualized those worlds. So I'd probably be intrigued.
Okay, I think I'm going to pick up Agatha Christie, so we can book club on that one. Yeah. Okay, last one. Epic Fantasy versus Scholarly Dissent. This is The Rose Field by Philip Pullman, the final volume of the Book of Jest trilogy, bringing Lyra's saga to a close. Does anyone know what we're talking about here? No? Okay. Or Catabasis by R.F. Huang, a darkly witty academic fantasy where two PhD students descend into hell to rescue their advisor. Wow.
Lucky advisor.
Lauren.
I'm doing the first one. It sounds a bit lighter.
The rose field. Okay.
Talk about an advisor who did a good job, right?
Yeah, they're going into the depths of hell for them.
I mean, I said I did like dystopian literature, so I think I probably have to go with that
okay,
one.
Okay, I'll book club with you on that one. Okay, so just one quick, we have quick picks. You're just making a choice by title and author, just okay. Like why people buy wine, like is the label pretty or does it like set my mood? Okay, so are you going to pick up The Girls in the Cabin by Caleb Stevens, yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you going to pick
You'll
up The Good Lie by A.R. Torrey?
No.
No.
Okay. What Lies Beneath Us, John Mars?
No.
No.
Okay.
Scary.
The Drowning... The Drowning Woman by Robin Harding.
The Drowning Woman.
Okay, I'm not picking any of them up either. Well, this concludes our full day of Career Capital Voices in Finance and Investing. Thank you both for ending the day with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Yay.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.